Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, they call me Pook. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up being a man, but I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked, where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful that you can join us tonight on this April the 10th, 2018. We're here for another episode, and as I promised you this week, we're going to be focusing on positive story of revival and redemption. Our guest will be with us on Thursday night out of Ferguson, Missouri. He's the Workforce Development Specialist for a program entitled Save Our Sons, Powerful Peace. And we're going to let him tell you. I'm going to zip my lip most of the way. I'm just going to ask him some questions and let him share with you what we found. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is a national dialogue sponsored by Building Families and Communities Institute, Incorporated. Yours truly is the Chief Researcher and the facilitator for our traveling seminar and lecture series. So over the last 12-plus years, I have engaged in the process of traveling from city to city, employing our research-based model to identify certain socioeconomic issues that are prevalent for a particular population in America, that population being Afro-American males. What we have found is that there are some consistencies with certain issues and that there is a tremendous need to provide resolution and resolve, hence our effort. This podcast platform allows us to speak on a national basis, and we invite you, regardless of where you are listening to us tonight, to give us a call here, 657-383-0944. We will be more than happy to entertain your question and or comment. All we ask is that you keep it as relevant as possible to our topic and conversation for tonight, and that we show deference to all of our callers. As I've said many times before, I don't expect you to agree with everything I say, but we certainly will respect and honor your input tonight on the dialogue. Thank you to our Facebook friends that are watching us and keeping up with us. We appreciate you following our live feed. We do encourage you, though, to have your voice heard right here on Talk Straight. That's what we do. We talk straight about it. Sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes it's not pretty. However, we need to have some straight conversation about it. Okay. With that being said, again, the number is 657-383-0944. Often when the media law enforcement and community activists, people in general, speak about the tragedy we witnessed as an American, as a country, that transpired in Ferguson, Missouri back in 2014. Not only that, but other riots around America most recently. They tend to speak from the perspective of pain and loss. However, there's another way to All right. I don't know what happened. Sometimes it does happen. But we had a little problem there. I think we're back now. I appreciate your caller holding on there. Something happened that I got kicked out of the studio, my own studio. Okay. Nonetheless, we were talking about how oftentimes when we talk about these tragedies, people see it as a point of pain and loss. But I've had the privilege of traveling to Ferguson, Missouri recently within a month or so ago, and to actually go to what was known as Ground Zero. And there I actually saw firsthand the area and the place, and now a powerful, remarkable story of revival where once set a place of turmoil and destruction. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight, how to transform community hurt into healing. The Ferguson story of revival. That's our topic tonight. How to transform community hurt into healing. The Ferguson story of revival. It looks like we had Pastor Waller there, and I trust he'll come back. I see we have a call in queue already. Bear with us. Give me a few minutes as we go through our monologue, which provides us context for our conversation tonight. And then we'll be right back with you. Hopefully Pastor Waller will be able to get back with us there. And you call us here, 657-383-0944. Again, we're talking from the topic tonight, how to transform community hurt into healing. Excuse me. Look like we're having some technical difficulties here tonight. All right. The Ferguson story of revival. 1 Peter 3 and 15 reads, "But sanctify the Lord God in your heart, and be ready always to give an answer to every man that asketh you a reason for the hope that is in you, with meekness and fear." Just a little context, a little background here. We have a lot of young men who started at an early age, and many of them spend many years of their lives locked away in prison. Approximately 12 to 13% of the American population is African American. But yet, African Americans make up 35% of jail inmates and 37% of our national prison population. Of the 2.2 million male inmates, as of 2014, according to the United States Department of Justice, there are approximately 400,000 African-American males incarcerated in the United States of America. Now, with that being said, it takes about 31,000, a rough estimate, it varies from state to state, but $31,307 every year to feed, clothe, and maintain them in this incarcerated environment. In other words, to keep them locked up. Somewhere around $2.5 billion is spent in the industry of locking human beings up, not just African Americans, but they make up half of the population by themselves, African American males. While they're there, there is lost potential. Now, it brings us to this small city of Ferguson, Missouri, roughly about 23,000 people. And on this particular day, a young man by the name, the late Michael Brown Jr., who was born on May 20th, 1996, grew up in Ferguson, Missouri, attended the Normandy High School in the St. Louis County area. Now, he, like many other African-American males across urban America, had challenges with meeting the civic expectation of going to the traditional school, making his grades, and acclimating himself and graduating in a normal situation. While he didn't do that, he was able to go to an alternative school and graduated. Not only did he graduate from this alternative school, but at the time of his death, at the age of 18, he was on his way to starting a trade school. And he had dreams and aspirations of being an entertainer, and he had his ideas about what life would be for him. In fact, I understand he was known as an amateur musician, and he posted a few songs on the popular music sharing site SoundCloud, where he and his friends and family enjoyed that, right? His handle was Big Mike. Can you see the humanity here? Big Mike studied himself enough, even though he had issues, and he grew up in a socially, economically challenging environment. Big Mike maintained himself enough to get the credits and to get accepted to the Veterans College, which was a technical school. And there he was just 2 days before his terrible end. He was scheduled to enter a training program for heating and air conditioning repair. Young man, like anybody else, goals, aspirations, dreams, looking for a part of the American pie. Living under tough and difficult circumstances, no doubt, but overcame some odds and worked hard enough to position themselves to have a skill that was in demand. But something happened on this particular day, August 9th, 2014. He found himself in a major confrontation with one of the police officers of the St. Louis area at a convenience store. Brown was suspected of a strong armed robbery at a convenience store, and subsequently Brown was fatally shot by Officer Darren Wilson, who was 28 years old himself, a young man, Caucasian, should that matter. It took place some distance from the convenience store where it happened, though. He was with one of his friends, an older guy, Darren Wilson, who was 22 years old. And as they got into this fight, this struggle, I know the problem is that oftentimes young men, because they're angry and they're frustrated and they feel as though society has not given them, first of all, their family hadn't dealt them a good hand, and society continues to challenge their existence, they feel as though the only means that they have is to get buck. And you know what I mean? Just let everybody know I ain't having it. Now, this is a young man with hopes, dreams, aspirations. Could have done some great things. 2 days before his tragic end, he found himself in this tiff with a law enforcement officer. Not a good thing, because ultimately it ended his life. A couple of months ago, I was working with a police department down in Columbus, Mississippi, and I used the federal study that then President Obama and Attorney General Eric Holder had sanctioned to study this and figure out what the problem was. Now, they found that the officer was acting within his due bounds as a police officer, but yet they also found that the police department and the city, the government itself, had some imbalances. And we used this as a case study. We used this to talk to those officers in this city that had a similar population distribution and some of the similar circumstances, how they can focus on understanding young men like Mike Brown that walk the street every day. Okay? I'm not making excuse for his actions and ultimately cost him his life. But there are a lot of them on the street today. He's not very much older than my son, who was born 2 years later after him. My point is that it's about what we are deliberately and focused about teaching and doing. But I want to focus on the good that Mike Brown had in his heart. Now, we didn't know him, really. I didn't know him. I doubt that most of us know him. Those that locally perhaps know him. And I actually spoke with the gentleman we're going to have on our show live Thursday. He knew more about it than I did. In fact, I rode down the very street where he took his last breath. But the community there is still somewhat mourning, but there's hope in the ashes of the pain. There's hope. And we're going to, I'm excited about Thursday bringing that piece, but tonight I just want to introduce it to you. Mike Brown was a person, somebody's son, and he was somebody's grandchild. He was somebody's friend. Terrible things that seem to be consistent all over urban America caused him to get caught up and to have some problems and ultimately lose his life. We have that right here in my home city of Nashville, Tennessee. It's all over America. Now, we often hear the question, what are we going to do about it? And how are we going to strategically climb out of this rut? Right? There's hope. That's the good news. I want to just kind of highlight, after all of the mayhem and all the destruction and all the burning and all the looting, the Ground Zero was a Quick Trip gas station. And I'm going to show you, if you look on our Facebook feed, you will see in our next post how that place that was literally burned to the ground rose again from the ashes to become a beacon of light in Ferguson. Powerful story. But I want to just kind of highlight some of the economic factors. Ferguson, Missouri lost at least $5.7 million to damages. The amount of property damages between $14.7 million to $27.7 million. Now I ask the gentleman, how many of those African-American businesses were able to come back after the looting and destruction? I was really happy to hear him say that over 90-some percent of them came back. But you know what? They had to raise their prices, and the taxes were greater because they were trying to rebuild now. I hope that that community supports them and go in and support their businesses and things of that nature. All right. Having said that, I want you to listen to briefly what these brothers said back in the 70s, and we're going to bring it. We got us in queue. I see Pastor Wallace there with us, and Carlos in queue. We'll be right with you in just a second. Just catch him just for a second here. Just for a second.
Yeah.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Tonight we're talking about it, how to transform community hurt into healing. The Ferguson story of revival. I'm not mad at, because I sometimes look and laugh at the moon myself. These things will make you go crazy, man. You have to laugh at the moon to keep from crying. Pastor Wally, how you doing this evening, man? Help me out now. I'm in a jam, Pastor. I'm in a jam.
Man, I know one thing about you. You going like that, you don't handle it.
Yes, sir. Good evening. All right, good. 1098, a.k.a. Professor Outcast. Help me out, man. I'm slipping in the dark this year.
Oh, no, sounds like an eclipse to me. Sounds like a total eclipse of the moon. War.
All right. If I start to howling, you don't hold it against me, all right? I also have Pastor Wallace Frathert, guest, Professor Mika, a.k.a. 37.
She's back.
Mika to the show tonight.
Thank you. I feel so important. This is the only way I can feel important. Thank y'all.
Oh, well. You are important.
Yes.
You are. So, guys, you heard the monologue. And I want this gentleman to do the talking. And I spoke with him earlier today, and he is ready. And got some powerful stuff going on there, man. And for, it's an example, Outcast, of how we can overcome some things. You know, sometimes
right.
in your heat of the moment, it gets ugly, man. It looks bad. But we have
That's
to
right.
know that we should not give up. You know what I mean? Anybody want to come in on that? That's Walla? Mika?
Well,
go ahead.
Yes,
no, I mean, it gets ugly, but, yeah, in that heat of the moment, you got to regroup and rethink and see, get that blindfold off your eyes and see, hey, you can make it.
Okay.
Very well
What were you
going
to say?
Well.
Keep calm. Okay.
Keep calm. Yep. Stay calm, and don't let anger rule.
Yep.
Kudos to Ludie Wallace today. I give him kudos. See,
don't
you know,
that,
he went straight
man.
To the system. he
don't
went straight to the
that,
system.
Boy.
See? I like that.
Yeah, Lee. So here's the thing. Here's the thing, guys. I understand the anger and the frustration of people who say, I'm tired of being sick and tired, okay? They done throw their hands up, and here goes somebody else trying to tell me to keep calm and be nice and do things the right way and go along to get along. But my goodness, when am I going to catch a break? You understand what I'm saying? When they looked at the situation, Pastor Waller, they did find out that our late brother, Brother Brown, was in the wrong. And I'm not trying to justify his actions, but I'm saying that, like a lot of young guys, I can appreciate when your frustration boils up to such a level, you're in over your head, and you want some kind of resolve. That's not an excuse to buck authority and to break with protocol and to lose your mind. But, Pastor, talk to me about that. I know you are out there on a regular basis. How do you tell a young man he's knee-deep in hot water? How do you tell him, be calm?
That's pretty tough, that,
Pastor
brother.
Paul.
I tell you. How do you tell them that? To be still?
Yes, sir.
In what type of water?
I said knee-deep in boiling water.
In that type of water, man, to be still in boiling water. I mean, I like that because that's what's going on. And, man, I tell you what, these brothers are so bold, man. they making it through the deepness of the hot and boiling water, man, just to face up to the fact that I'm in a club and I'm doing all I can do to see if anybody gonna come out there and help. You know? And that's a, you know, so if it's that, you know, you got to be crying for help, man. You know, you ain't going to be in no deep, hot, scalding water and just say, I can handle it. No, man, it's just a cry. It's a cry for help. I'm out in the midst of it, and yes, I am, and I see it quite often, more so now than ever. You know, you and I talked about some things, and I told you what I'm doing now, and it caused me to see increasingly what's going on now, more so than I even knew from the beginning, man. I think it's a tough situation, and I'm watching the police, I'm watching the vice squad, or whatever you want to call them guys, jump out boys or whatever, every day, man, every day, man. I mean, attacking these innocent people, and, you know, and I'm watching it purposely for God want me to see it. So to be able to intercede and to stand in the gap for them, I guess God's saying, I want you to see what they're doing to them. You know, it's like going to a store and buying a game that says the good and the bad. And the one who's responsible for the good and the bad is one individual. And he don't care which one is going to win, the good or the bad. He just wanted to keep on going. So, you know, it's tough, man, to watch this thing and not to have all the ammunition that I need. But I still have hope, and I still believe that something can be done about it, you know. Corrupting the community, man, is only one right now. And as I said,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish. I apologize. Finish your thought, Pastor. Yeah. I had another question.
Yes, you know,
go ahead. Finish your thought.
I had just purchased a house. God blessed me to get a house. It was brought to my attention, you know, that my ministry needed some help. And and the house just so happened to be in the midst where it was an empty house. You know, usually it's people that break the window out and go in there and try to keep warm. Break the window out and go in and smoke it open, whatever they might want to do. And this is the house that you're talking about that I have. And man, look, it's almost an attack on me. But I know they ain't meaning no harm because they didn't know it, that it was going to be mine, you know, to do the work. And so this is the house that once upon a time was, again, going up in smoke by the drug game. And now I'm in it, in the same house, right in the midst of all that was going on. You know, and I hear somebody being saying, what are we going to do? It's not no what are we going to do. I'm already in the midst of it. It's who going to help me. You know, that's what's going on. I ain't not trying to do it all by myself, but man, hey, let me say this. I'm going to turn it back over to you. But I heard a song one day that was sung in the church house. I'll go if I have to go all by myself.
All right. Okay.
I'm already there.
So I was going to stay right there, Pastor. Don't leave from there. I was going to ask you.
All right.
Is it appropriate for you and I as elders to suggest to angry, frustrated young men who are ready to challenge law enforcement authority on the streets, is it appropriate for us to encourage them to fight physically with the police?
No.
Oh, no, I wouldn't think that's a good thing. You know, that's unequipped. I mean, you're
is there room for
fight,
us to understand where they're coming from?
Is there room for us to understand where they're coming from?
Yeah.
Oh, there's plenty of room to understand where they're coming from. I mean, these are innocent people. You know, these people that we're talking about, you know, had I not had the example for myself, then I may not be able to say that. I would be able to say, like my partner's mother used to say when she realized that our life changed, she'd say, well, y'all used to be crooks. You know, she was calling me, you know, that's just the way it was. The guy that's in my book, said that we were crooks. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying, she wasn't saying that putting us down or anything. That's the lifestyle that we was caught up in. But and that's what I'm talking about. Those guys, they are able to change, but right in the midst of right now, they're innocent guys that have eyes to see things, ears to hear things, and a way of going about doing things that caused them to be in a trap. You see?
Now, Pastor, let me play devil's advocate here, okay? And push back on you just a little, because I hear 3072. I see your amen corner right now. Let me push back for a second. Huh?
That's my go-to.
Okay. So now people say these guys know better. They've been taught, and they know right from wrong. Don't They need to go to jail. They need to be domesticated and taken off the street and put away. What about it?
What about it? Can I speak for him?
Go ahead. You don't mind, do you, Pastor? Go ahead, 372.
Well, I was just going to piggyback off of what he said. I mean, and to live by the sword is to die by one, and I believe strictly and solely in karma. So what you put out, it's going to come back around. So, right, while you were in the game and you had your up season and you was out there committing and you was hurting people, you was robbing, stealing, killing, I mean, right, it doesn't make what the police injustices that they do on people right. However, you should understand, since you've been in the game, that it's a part of the game.
Exactly.
And you should understand that so much so that you should know how to play the rules of the game and how to get out of it even. That is not your battle. That's not your duel to try to settle scores and all that. Everybody, as the Bible say, as the first should be last and the first will be, everything is going to come round circle. So we just got to know our places and hold our positions and try to do the right thing as we know the right thing to do.
Yeah.
That's all anybody can do. That's it.
You know.
So when
you
didn't know the right thing at first, but now coming around the corner, you know the right thing now. That's not your, how you, right, you done so much wrong, all you could do is what you know is right now. However, you can't go back and change what you did, and you can't stop possibly what they doing.
Gotcha.
You can just play your part in hopefully making things right again.
Okay. That's right. Okay. Hey, I agree with that, man.
Oh, go ahead, Pastor, what you say?
Yes. I will agree with that. You know, that's well said. Because after all, it's an experience, you know, so it does compassion right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that is. So, you know, with the compassion, you know, it comes the willingness to say that if there's a chance that one may come up to me, as often 37 people say, what is a guy who is getting a lot of money, decides
mm-hmm.
that they want to live their life, what do you have to offer? And that's the willingness
right.
to say, if it comes up to me, I'll be ready. And let them know how I went about it. And that's what
right.
a witness is. So, you know, that's well put.
Well, you know, there is a certain principle that I'm convinced all of our young people, male and female, since we're talking about those that are at threat, African-American males, certainly them, there's a certain principle that we have to teach. And that is, he that is slow to anger is better than the... Sometimes we don't really understand what drives our anger, and I'm guilty of being angry
mm-hmm.
before. The anger is driven by really not knowing what to expect or what's going to come next. And the longer you go, the longer you go with this uncertainty, it turns into anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, the slightest thing can cause you to trigger off and pop on somebody.
Yeah.
Well, that may not end well for you, you know? Go ahead, 37.
I was just agreeing with you. I mean, and it's like anybody, a pastor that's gone from, like Pastor Waller, drug dealer to straight, a convict that's gone from convict to living a normal life. Right, we have to understand our places that we held and our places that we hold. We need to, like you said, have compassion, have understanding, then you can help somebody to say, hey, you know what? I've been there where you've been. I've tried all that. I was angry, too. I felt that. I understand your concern about the police brutality and whatever else is going on. However, man, even if you want to just get back, it's a way to do it. It's a
That's
way
right.
to do it. Where justice can be done on a righteous way even.
That's right. I like
you
that.
You know, there are so many young men out there who, to no fault of their own, they're facing social challenges and even oftentimes mental health challenges. And I'm one of the things I've noticed is that And I'm not a clinician. Let me make that very clear now. So I'm not a mental health clinician. But I've noticed that there are symptomatic aspects of things associated with depression and even bipolar disorder. And the average person don't understand that, particularly.
And I think I suffer from all of them. We all suffer from all of them.
Okay.
And
particularly law enforcement officials who are out there on the beat every day tend, I'm not saying all of them, they tend not to be aware of things. And technically their job is just to execute the law, not to be a mental health specialist. Okay? But at the same time, there has to be some balance. So it says to me that the community have to focus on mental health issues and identifying where there are needs of their young people, young and old, but specifically young. You take a young man that's 18 years old, and he has a society, a nation that's expecting him to operate like he's 40 and be responsible and accountable for himself.
And guess what? Reverend Dockery, I disagree.
Hold on one second. I'm going to hear you. Hold on one second. He's 18 years old. He's expected to grow up and to conduct himself like he's well-rounded, socially adjusted, but yet he has not had pro-social instruction from an early age. And he's only responded to the pressure of his social environment. That's all he's known, is how to adapt and respond in that manner. But you expect him to be well-adjusted socially, economically, and things of that nature. That's an anomaly, and we definitely have to look at that. Go ahead, 372, what were you going to say?
I was just going to respectfully disagree with what you were saying about the police is only out there to do their job. That's not so. I work in healthcare. In the healthcare field, guess what? I'm anybody over 2 to 3 years in their profession is expected to be seasoned and well knowledgeable enough to know the different, not just one aspect or one scope of a dynamic, but different dynamics of, man, I'm going in the hood today to work. These people there, they're used to this, they're used to that. When I work in healthcare, I can't discriminate on who I can help or who I'll help take care of because they're racist or they don't want me to even. No, I have to realize and understand the dynamics of their situation. Maybe they were groomed and raised to hate people. Maybe they're ignorant. Maybe a lot. I have to take all that into consideration and still be able to and do my service.
All right, hold that thought.
To get them well and out of the hospital.
All right, hold that thought, Mika. We have 314. Hold your thought, Mika. We got 314-4644 joining us. Welcome to Talk Straight. This is Reverend Dockery, your host. A question or comment?
You know, you talk about Ferguson.
Yes, sir.
Ferguson's population was majority black.
That's correct.
And if the people in those towns let their police, who are their employees, behave and mistreat and run buck wild in the community, whose fault is that?
You know, that's, I had that conversation with some individuals, and you're absolutely right. It's the people's fault. In fact,
it's the people's fault.
Election they had, they had an opportunity to vote a black mayor in, and they missed
the
opportunity.
They had opportunity to vote out Mayor Knowles, and they did not.
Yes, sir.
And I'm going to tell you something else. Much of the problem that's in those communities is caused by a lot of the people that look like the ones that you know who. And that's a tragedy. Because in those areas, blacks have moved out of the city into those areas, and the elderly blacks, and bought property. And then you have a lot of this thuggish behavior that goes on. The average person is not afraid of the police. They're afraid of being mugged or whatever by somebody else. And let me say this, and I know Ferguson very well, but I live near there.
Okay.
The same thing is in Moline Acres, Berkeley, Jennings. You know, the people in Jennings dissolved their police department. That's where Darren Wilson came from. Because they was running buck wild. They said, we're getting rid of it. They got rid of the whole police department. Wilson got rid of the whole police department. Another community, and I can't think of the name of it, might have been Charlotte, got rid of the whole police department. And let me say this. The people that was burning down, looting, they didn't live in that area. Those were blacks mm-hmm. that was coming from elsewhere that done that.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
And I'm going to say this thing here. If they had went further north from West Florida to mm-hmm. Halls Ferry, then made a left on Halls Ferry and went west to an area called Barrington Down, those black folks was waiting on them. It would have been a bloodshed because you wasn't going in that black community and tearing up stuff. That's where the average house is about $700,000. Blacks in that area wasn't going to put up with that mess. Mm-hmm. And you got these progressives that continue to try to put people who don't have the means to survive in those areas in those mm-hmm. areas, thus bringing down the property value and everything else. That is a tragedy.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Let me ask.
And
you
we
got to
call it like it is. No, we don't want that kind. We, you know, everybody wants the best for young people. I know I do. It ain't these young blacks in these schools. It's these knuckleheads. Some of these organizations like the NAACP, not all of them, because it's legal defense arm is a good organization. But some of the other policies come out of that organization is just terrible. And then you got the school teachers unions. Then you got the school district. Anytime you have a municipality that's 70-80% black, 80% of the police should be black. 80% of the firefighters should be black. City hall, public works, and the school district. But if you don't come out and exercise that type of political power, then I don't know what to tell you. And those businesses that got burnt down, they were not black businesses, by the way. Those were businesses that was owned by foreigners and some white businesses.
A lot of starting with the quick trip, sure. But now that's what I was going to ask you. What is your perception of the fact that they were able to bring from those ashes the Urban League Center there? That, in my opinion,
well,
doing
Quick Trip just moved further. Quick Trip just moved further out west on West Florida and just this side of 270.
Okay.
And they just gave that building to and rightfully so, because you right there at them projects and kids coming into the Quick Trips stealing. Getting soda, ain't paying for it, and getting themselves, you know, that kind of activity was going on.
Paula, the question to you, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
Well, no, that's what it is. Quick Trip was not going to rebuild that.
I understand that.
The location. They just
gave it to the Urban League. I'm not talking about the motives of Quick Trip right now. I'm talking about the people that live there in Ferguson, their efforts to take advantage of the opportunity to build the Urban League and provide that center for this program that are there, the workforce development and all of, is that a good thing or bad thing in your opinion?
Well, that's yes, that there is a positive thing that that happens.
Right. And that's what our focus is tonight. That's what our focus is tonight.
You know, the Urban League's got another big building about 3 miles from there. Well, they supposed to have been doing the same thing.
Well, we can't control
that.
Matter
of fact, it ain't even a good 3 miles.
Well, you know what? We have some things here in my city in Nashville. I think Outcast will tell you there's a lot of folks that need to be doing things different. But, I mean, but you know, we got to keep doing what we do and make sure we push where we can.
And, you know, here's another thing, too. As soon as blacks move out in the counties, here come them ratchet butt politicians that they had in the city following them.
Wait a minute, man.
You're
stepping on my toes, man. Leave me alone, 314.
you look up, here come them same old ratchet politicians wanting to get elected in this county area and start the process all over again. I can name a whole bunch of them.
You know what, 4644, I'm so glad I'm not a politician. I'm an advocate for people.
But there are some good ones now. Honestly, there's some good ones, but some of them ain't worth a damn. Ain't worth the salt in their bread.
I think your point is well taken. Your point is very well taken. I was going to ask gentleman here, 1098, What do you think about his what he was saying on 1098?
I don't disagree with him. You know, he was on point concerning everything that he basically discussed. But you know, when it came down to the buildings and things of that nature being destroyed, yes, you know, there, it was a multitude of people, businesses got destroyed, and there were some blacks in there. But as he was stating, you know, he lived there, was the majority of foreigners' businesses. But at the end of the day, I agree with his point also. If you got an 80% black, and you know, you should be running that. You know, my question has been this: when it comes to Nashville, why have a Nashville ever had a black mayor? And it came to me: you have more
gentry.
White than you have black.
Gentry.
You know,
Gentry.
You know, who that gentry? For gentry for what?
What's up with gentry?
Okay. Well,
all right,
I think
my point is this.
Okay.
I agree with his statement, the bottom line, and I just tied that in with it, you know. But I still ask the question, why haven't they had a black mayor here in Nashville, which at one point you and I discussed that briefly. You know, now Gentry shouldn't even been at the table. Well, he gave it up this time. You just stayed on down in that county clerk. You know what I'm saying? But
y'all throwing blows now. Hold on. Let me bring in 847-4639. Welcome to the discussion. This is Talk Straight, host Reverend Dockery. Question, comment?
Pastor Dockery, it's Professor Robinson.
Hey, this is Professor Robinson. Yes, sir. How you doing, sir?
I am doing great. I'm doing great. I wanted to piggyback on the gentleman who is from Missouri and his points about, and the other caller was saying, when do we start to take control? When do we start to do something? And one of my other questions, and I guess my question is, it's a shame that brother died. But we have a lot of other young men who are dying, and we don't even know their names.
Come on now.
A lot of young black men are dying. Thousands of young men are dying, and we don't even know their names.
That's right.
What's right. I'm not trying to belittle anything. I'm trying to say, what's the difference? Why this young man versus you know, Baltimore, Chicago, Nashville, and
I can tell you why.
Thousands.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The reason why is because, I can tell you why real quick. It's because a white police officer killed him. We're not complaining about the blacks that's killing other blacks out here in these streets, driving damn fools, running red lights, stop sign don't mean a damn thing, running over kids, mangling their bodies after they get off the school bus.
Yes, sir.
And here's the next thing. Driving their cars not only into the house, but up inside the house and tearing up stuff.
Yeah.
So it's clearly a internal issue then, it sounds like, 4644. Is that right?
Well, it absolutely is. And we need to start speaking on that issue.
I agree with
because
that.
Things are changing. Things ain't like you, and you got all these other ethnic groups in here looking at you like you're crazy. We need to start speaking on that.
You know, I'll tell you, Professor Robinson, he and I in our conversation, he says all the time he's sick and tired of being last and having to look stupid in the face when everything comes. I'll let you articulate it, Professor, but I don't want to try to speak for you. But I think you all in agreement there. The bottom line is this, and that is we have a responsibility to be accountable for our actions in the society we live in. Are things going to be just like you want them? Are there imbalances? Are there injustice? Perhaps so. But you still have to be in order. And when you are out of order and hurt other people around you, you only add to the problem. Now, I want to respond to Professor's question, what's the difference in him? And there is no difference. I think that was my underlying point, that there is no difference in him, he, Mike Brown, that being, and other young men in that same predicament. What they all have in common is a failure first in the family structure and then in the community to organize itself to protect and to nurture its young to become productive and independent on their own. Not only in America.
Agreed.
But that's what
agreed.
I would assert.
Agreed.
But Professor, you want to say anything else?
I guess one of the things that I keep going to is, are we focused on the right thing? Are our energies pointed in the right direction? And we have a lot of people marching, a lot of people doing, memorials and so on. But at the end of the day, are we really focused on the right thing? And will our strategies lead to the desired outcomes that we espouse? And so I see a disconnect. I don't see ways to legislate behavior, to legislate love.
Mm-hmm.
If we were
mm-hmm.
able to legislate behavior, we really wouldn't have prisons.
Sure.
Because people would be afraid because of going to prison. So we have legislation on the books that manages behavior. And I talked to a friend of mine, and I said, I'm sorry about the young man in California that died, but what
right.
type of legislation can we put on the books to prevent these things? And I can't come up with anything. And
we
are marching, and we're yelling and screaming and angry and burning things up. But what can we do tangibly to change how people view us and how we view ourselves and how we act towards each other and how people act towards us?
Well, can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, Thursday.
So I wanted to agree with the professor there. I mean, again, it goes back to accountability. And are we holding, let's just set aside the other people outside of our communities. Are we holding one another accountable? Are we in some way, like you pointed out, Reverend Dockery, the disconnect and the family and all that? So when we march and we get angry and we burn and we do all those things, are we supporting the fact that, hey, those structures were very weak? There were none existent even. Are we supporting that? Are we saying that that's okay? They should just overlook that and not punish or not be wrong, or you know what I'm saying? I mean,
I
like you said, right, we need to address that and tell us, hey, people, we're not behaving in a way and in such that we are commanding respect, or we're commanding justice, or we're commanding
right.
to be treated fairly
so,
even.
So,
we just
so
get angry
like,
when they act out and don't respect us.
Yeah.
So it sounds like what you're saying is very similar to 46:44, and that I felt
mm-hmm.
his passion in terms of the destructive behaviors and mindsets. Not this ain't nobody white doing this. These are black folk in these neighborhoods that are behaving in a manner that's leading to self-destruction. So it sounds like to me that you have to police yourself first.
You should. Our kids should be taught that.
Hold on 1 second. I don't want to put words in 46:44 mouth. Did I understand you correctly, sir?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I'm not going to totally dismiss some protests because some protests and change because we have politicians here. I put out a white paper after Ferguson, and I sent it to politicians here. I sent it to politicians around the country.
Mm-hmm.
I testified for Jamila Nasheed, a state senator. At the state legislature on behalf of body cams, and
they
do make changes, but still, people in these communities have to do their civic duties. That is their department, not only the police department. You know, here's the funny thing about this: is for instance, you got your kids coming out of your household where your parents don't pay taxes. And so on and so on. They have to get on a bus and drive past
mm-hmm.
the fire department, drive past
mm-hmm.
the police department, because those departments are all manned by whites who don't even live in the area. They got to drive past those institutions, what's paying a good paying a salary and wages to go out and work minimum wage with no benefit and no pension mm-hmm. in these fast food mm-hmm. restaurants. That is totally mm-hmm. deplorable.
Yeah.
I see. So we talked about this some, Professor Robinson, in terms of the need of having a specific strategy that is measurable, time, phase, and measurable, that will lead to the outcomes we say we want. Now, some people would argue, Pastor Waller, that we trust God and the Lord will fix it.
Yeah.
Where are we at with that, Doug?
Oh, man. You know, it's a great thing. I think I'm still listening. I'm thinking about the power of the cry. You know, there's power in it. That's when I think, you know, when you say the Lord will fix it, he says, I cried unto the Lord, poured out my complaint. I poured out my complaint. In other words, you didn't just semi with a tear. You poured it out, my complaint, to the Lord.
Right.
Now, he's the one who, do I believe he can have it? Yes, I do. You know, that's the only reason why I would say, you know, he deserves his props. I think he's capable. But who's going to bow down to his ways? You know, who's going to say, okay, let's take it to him first.
Hello.
Let's take it to him first, you understand, because he's the greatest instructor. And he knows what we're dealing with. Know how long we've been dealing with this, and I think brother said something about, you know, the percentage of people in our communities are 80% black. When he said that, okay, and should be somebody who's concerned, who's there to serve and protect. Maybe they can be honest enough with themselves and say, "Let me encourage these brothers. I see what they're doing out here, but that's not going on. The ones that's coming out there are already afraid." And then they already got a motive of when they come out there. So it's like, okay, we can treat them like we want to treat them if that's what they choose to do. Now, I watch that a lot of times. Yes, I do. I watch it purposely. I've been in it myself. I was done that way. You see what I'm saying? And they didn't even know I was a minister. And I didn't tell them that I was a minister. And I let them do all that they did to me and more. And if I had a flinch one little bit, they would have beat me down. You understand?
Okay.
And then it found out later on that I was a minister. So I'm saying, you know, it happened. And I didn't put myself in no position for them to treat me like that, but they did. And I'm saying all that to say this. If it had been a group of black police, I don't think they would have done that. I just like to think that they wouldn't, but I don't know, you know. It's not easy. I just put it like that. And if we
well,
took it
can
hard,
I say...
Yeah. Go ahead, right quickly.
Can I interject?
30,
well,
ahead,
I was just going to say, I'm not a pastor and I'm not a minister, but I have a strong, I feel like, relationship with God. And in my relationship with God, I know what's right and I know what's wrong. And I know when I'm doing right and I know when I'm doing wrong. And God shows up when I know that I'm doing right. Now, when you know you're doing wrong and trying to use an excuse to continue to do wrong, and people should, oh, God is, I'm sorry, God is not going to drop down at the sky and pour police batons off your head and stop them from shooting you. You stop playing your part and crying, and then maybe God could step in and intervene and answer prayers to heal the community, to stop the killing, to do all of this other stuff. But we cannot continue to play a deaf ear and a blind eye to wrongdoing and think that everything going to be made okay. We got to do our part.
Right.
Got to do it.
Well, well
right.
taken. Y'all, pardon me for a second. Let me do a pause here. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. Tonight, we're talking from the topic, how to transform community hurt into healing. And we're looking at the Ferguson story, a revival. This is part one of a two-part discussion. The number to call us here is 657-383-0944. Grateful to have our callers commenting and sharing with us. Okay. Now I'm going to tell you something. Y'all must think something's going to drop out of the sky or something. Professor Robinson.
Go ahead.
Y'all must think it's going to just diggity-bam.
Yeah.
Is it? Correct me now. And I have a question that I want to ask in this last 30 minutes of the show. Go ahead, Professor.
Well, I wanted to just share some facts, and because I know we've touched on the church several times over the last several weeks, and when you look at, you know, black people in this country self-define as Christian more than anybody else.
True.
Black people in this country, you know, when they're polled, 83% of black people say that religion is a part of their day-to-day life compared to 63% of white people. And
okay,
so black people are heavily, heavily involved. And we are not capitalizing on the strength that we possess within the black church to empower individuals and to empower those communities to change.
Okay.
We're missing out on a really strong, really strong base that we can capitalize on, that we can leverage.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting. Okay. Let me ask this question to you all, and because I really wanted, this is a question that we shared in the Facebook post for today. This is today's question. When you consider the fact that nationally, African American males represent somewhere around $2.5 billion of the United States annual economy, but it's not perhaps like you think. It's because of their presence in the criminal justice system. What do you think will happen to the United States stock market if tomorrow we done something that positioned them to control $2.5 billion of the economy as business owners and not in prison commodities? What do you think would happen to the stock market? Anybody? Boy,
if it's done properly, the stock market will. If it's done properly, the stock market will flourish. It depends on where those dollars are going to be. They're going to move from one investment vehicle to another investment vehicle.
Yeah, could I say something?
Wow. Go ahead.
Don't think that African Americans.
I have to go with the professor on that one. That's what I would call the invisible hand of competition. I had to go with him on that. You know, he's a
hold on one second.
You know,
I got to ask
that's
you.
Build a hand of competition. Yeah.
Wow. Go ahead. 44.
I don't
ahead.
Think anything. I don't think anything will happen. If we think that Black America is holding America hostage like that, then I think you're misleading yourself. You know, here in the city of St. Louis, they brought in 80,000 Bosnians during the time that they was having their skirmish over there where they, you know, was 80,000 and none of them are unemployed. Where at the same time, you got black unemployment that's clean through the roof. So no, they just replace them. Blacks have to do that themselves in one way or the other.
Okay.
Don't think that you got that type. You know, you can't, you got 26% of your people, and that's designated as black, that's living below poverty. Then we say that the median income is about $35,000, $36,000. Then when you multiply by the number of people that's in the working age, I'm not talking about toddlers and kindergarten students. I'm talking about those in the working age, and multiply that by that median, it comes nowhere near $1 trillion, nowhere near it. So we have to stop fooling.
I'm going to disagree with all three of you all. But before I do, let me let 3072 throw her head in there and pass it along. So far, I'm disagreeing with all three of you all. But that's good. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. What do you say, 3072?
Now, what was the question again?
It was, considering all the money that's spent to incarcerate black males, $2.5 billion annually, if they were owners in the economy and contributed to the American economy, what do you think would happen to the stock market?
Ooh.
Now, I didn't ask that question on that level. I'll answer that later. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
that's a kind of hard one because, I mean, they probably wouldn't know what to do with it, but if they did know what to do, then the market would crash. They wouldn't need too much more profit off of it.
Say what? The market
won't crash.
I mean, because look at it. Seriously, do you know how much money they're making off of black people's ignorance?
Hold on, Mika. You own to something. Professor Robinson, that was my response to you, Professor Robinson. It would cause a crash in the market. Let me explain to you why I say that. Because what the stock market has been doing for the last 30 years is making predictions based on a algorithm or calculations of the way the economic trends in the country's been going. And if you suddenly ejected with this phenomenon of black men no longer being prisoners and being commodities in America, but owning capital and contributing and controlling major markets, sir, it will cause the stock market to crash for a long time.
And think of it, just in our discussions on the black community and the dope dealers. Oh my God, what if they were educated enough to know how to get in and get at the game and participate in oh my God, bruh, what?
So what you're saying? Go ahead.
Where did the money come from?
Hold on.
I can understand what she's saying. Get in and get out. But, you know, you have the feds down on you all the time. So you can get
but
in.
Look,
and before you get out, the feds going to be right there on the door.
Well, people,
you know,
Listen, 1098. But that's how our president. That's how, I'm sorry to say it, but that's how the white man got ahead. That's how they did.
Exactly.
So what
this is why they have RICO now.
Man.
This is why they have RICO Act now.
Well,
see, those days are gone. So whatever you're doing, you better not show your face or have your
face. They're still doing it.
Through the stock market. Going back to what I stated about the invisible hand of competition. Before they let that stock market crash, they're going to shut it down. And then coming back into the invisible hand of competition, what's most needed, they're going to go right back down there on those blacks, and they're still going to be in control again.
And I'm going to let y'all in on another secret. The lottery is another big ticket winner for our Caucasian people. We just don't know how to play that game either. But
Let me get 46, 44 in there. What say you,
well,
sir?
Blacks used to play the policy, which eventually turned into the lottery. But you have to look at who pays for prisons. States pay for prisons. That's why they went private, because they could no longer afford to run
the state. Who is funding the state?
Hey, 37-2. Hold on. Let them finish.
Yeah, but states pay private corporations, who, by the way, some of your pension funds is probably invested in, and they're running these prisons. And you actually paying for it also. It's that intermingleness that you just can't get away from. But here's the thing. Why are we concentrating so much about people in prison when you got black kids that's doing the right thing in school?
Sure.
It's got their nose to the stone in the books, going to school on time, but they are having difficult times. Those are the ones that should be given the attention.
Okay.
I agree. And I'm one of those people that work hard every day, and my taxpayer dollars contribute to all of those things that you mentioned. Exactly. And when I get short on my light bill, nobody's coming to my defense and my aid to say, hey, Ms. Dockery, I'm going to pay your bill for you this month because, right, exactly. However, the game is what the game is, and it's not about the little man. It's about the big man staying big.
Well, so
here's
the thing. In the United States of America, we have a system of free enterprise. It's a game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you learn the rules of the game. And not only do you learn the rules, but you learn how to, Professor Robinson, manipulate those rules.
I agree.
You stand a chance of winning the game and creating your own game to make other people play
your
rules.
That's right.
Now, one of the things that I think historically that people of Afro or Negro descent have not done very well collectively, and that is to corner the game. Now, every other ethnic group has created a sub-game in the American game of free enterprise. And that's why 46, 44, you see these foreigners able to come over, start businesses and flourish and things of that nature. And we've been here for all these years, and many of us collectively, not everybody, but I take your point, 46, 44. There are some very positive things that are being done by individuals that look like us, but they don't get the spotlight because the media will not take the time to recognize them. But there are things that we can do. And go ahead, Professor. Go ahead.
Pastor, we don't take the time to recognize them. Let's not focus on the media. We don't take the time to recognize them. We have 26 point – in 2017, there were 26.7 million black people with a high school degree or better in this country.
Yes,
26.7 million with a high school diploma or better. We should be harnessing the intellect of all those people to address our issues.
Mm-hmm.
We have the brain thrust. We just aren't focused on the right things. At some point, we should acknowledge and be upfront about it that we are okay with writing off another generation because that's what we're doing. Because we're focusing on the wrong things. Let's just be honest about it. We've written off several generations already. Let's focus on the ones who are trying the hardest. Let's make it easier for them to accomplish some things, and we will start to see a change in the trajectory.
I agree.
We say we don't have all the resources, but we're trying to put out all of the fires.
I agree.
And we're not making a whole lot of progress.
I give you another example.
Okay.
You should leave it up to no school board on the direction that your child education is going to go. That should be
your direction. I agree.
You should not leave it up to a teacher's union. You know, I'm a Donald Trump supporter. Why?
What?
Because he wants school choice. No,
okay,
see, there y'all go.
That's a part of the problem.
Yeah, that's part of the problem. There you
go.
You ridicule. See, all blacks is not the same. You know, when black, like I told you about those blacks out there in that one area that the marchers Ben and I had that came in, those blacks do not think on the same level that those is in the inner city. They have to protect their interests.
Sure.
They want their
sure.
children to be able to go to the school that they choose, where people are accountable. Then you got those who are not accountable. Well, they put their child wherever the system says they got to go. So, yes, I want school choice, where parents can have the right to put their child where they want, and vouchers where the money can follow. That's the most – that would be one positive step for what we call disadvantaged parents or disadvantaged families. I don't have to worry about my child going to no public schools because I can pay for them to go wherever I want them to go. But I do have concern about those who can't. And when I look at the logical way for them to be able to have that type of access and privilege, it would be in the form of school choice with vouchers. And there's some other things too. Tax reform. You know, one of the most tried, proved, and tested ways in this country is for you to get an education, get a job, and get married, and raise your family.
Wow.
Anybody that's, and when you try to go beyond those tried, proved, and tested means, then that's when you start having problems.
I see.
Because if you don't produce a family, and that family has to have intergeneration assets in the form of grandparents. I'm talking about true, real grandparents. Not no 35, 36, 37-year-old grandparents. You got to have real grandparents because they have a lot that they can offer to the raising of children. they have disposable income that can help provide an education for that child. But when you remove those elements, you got some problems.
Okay. Well, I was in agreement with him up until the Donald Trump thing. And let me just say, let me just say this, okay? So for anybody that don't make $1 million or plus, he is not in anybody's best interest other than those people. Now, and as far as the poor black people, that, and this is just my opinion. I am not a professor. They just called me Professor Mika on here just to make me feel good.
We understand.
But for anybody that voted for this sick, sadistic, racist animal, I'm sorry, you are misled and misguided. This man is only out to protect himself. Now, in the process of protecting himself, whoever else follow behind that, that's just they luck. But no. Do not be confused. I agree with you as far as the grandparents.
Let me address this real quick on her.
Go ahead.
If you got a business and you go from 35% down to 20-15% paying business taxes, that's a good thing.
Yes.
For those who don't have businesses, it's terrible. Over in Granite City, Illinois, ma'am, let me finish, please. Let me finish.
Hold on,
everybody, listen. Everybody is not going to make it. I mean, that's just a fact. In Granite City, Illinois, In Granite City, Illinois, where they're getting ready to reopen Granite City Steel because of the tariffs that he's imposed on the import of steel and aluminum. That's over 2,000 people, including black people, because Granite City, Illinois is right next to East St. Louis, that will be getting their jobs back, where they can do things with the salary that they're going to be open. That's a good thing. Tax reform on the personal level and the business
for
level. That's
people,
a good thing.
For 2,000 people.
It's
a small town.
If you listen to him, you may be able to understand where he's coming from. Not saying you're going to agree with him, but let him finish so you can understand.
When I die, I should be able to pass my wealth on to my children without being taxed again. Look at blacks that have farms. When the principal owner die, they have to sell portion of, if not the entire farm, just to pay death taxes, which is totally ridiculous. That's money in the bank you've already paid taxes on. And then when you look at the 10 top poverty-stricken cities in this country, starting off with Detroit, working your way on down to New Jersey and Newark, they've been controlled by Democrats. Some of them as early as 1908 and 1907.
All right.
So
let me say this. I don't care if you're part of the Mickey Mouse Party on this show. That's your business. But I would certainly say this, that you should look at no president for their personal attributes, but their policy.
Absolutely.
And see how you as an individual, as a citizen, can benefit from the policies that whatever and whoever's in charge of government are bringing. That's what a lot of times our emotions cause us to lose out on opportunity.
No, and it's not about the emotions as far as for me. And we're talking about we're incorporating God, not just ourselves. So to me, and I have no shame to say that I am a supported Democrat. It's not just about me. It's my business. But I'm talking about it's not just about me, but it's about the community as we're talking about and the world as we are all being affected.
All right, I think that's a whole nother show. Let me go to Professor Robinson right quickly, and then we got 10 minutes here. We have to soon kind of bring our conversation close.
And Pastor Doctor, I think of one of the things that we keep stressing is let's look at facts and because. I'm going to say that black people haven't fared well under the Democrats nor the Republicans. And it's not so much the Democrats or the Republicans. It's really us. We are the ones who allow ourselves to be taken advantage of by the majority of us voting for the Democrats. And so we disempower ourselves.
That's fair.
And so Let's look at the facts, and then let's put a strategy in place that says we have to do better. Well, we can't just continue these conversations because we've been talking a very, very, very long time. And some people are doing well. You know, I'm going to say I'm in that category. But overall, we are still struggling. There was a report, I think the Times did a couple weeks ago, that said, you know, rich black boys, rich black men, boys, they are least likely to remain rich compared to their white counterparts. And so there are issues out there, and we're focusing on the smoke and mirror stuff and being distracted by the shiny objects, and we're not taking care of what we need to take care of.
That's fair.
And you got to realize that all blacks are not the same. The number of black students that's attending schools from kindergarten to 12th grade where the tuition is $40,000 a year and up is increasing every year. Those children, when they grow up, they're going to have a whole different outlook, mentality, and attitude towards things than someone else that's coming out of inner city schools. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Okay. All right. Wow. Powerful conversation. Let me bring it back to our topic, because this is where we're going to pick up on Thursday, how to transform community hurt into healing. And we're using as a story of revival. Now, I love what I've heard tonight. I hope that those that are listening on the podcast platform and other places on Facebook will think about what's being said. I think some very powerful statements have been made. And if we simply apply what we know, some things you may not know, but what you do know, take advantage of it, act on it. And then we'll be in a much better position to, as Professor Robertson is saying, to make a difference for ourselves. I don't care what the next man is doing. I'm more concerned about what I'm doing and what I will do next. When you're playing chess, you do think about your opponent, but you have to be aware of what moves you're going to make so that you don't get checked and knocked off the board. So, but great conversation. In this last 6 minutes, let me just give everybody a brief opportunity to say a last word, then we'll turn it over to Pastor Waller, and then we'll prepare to get out of here. Let's start with you, 1098, since you've been so quiet tonight.
Well, you know, I mean, I really haven't been quiet, but you know, the stock market came up and things of that nature.
Yeah, that messed you up then.
Professor is into business and marketing and things of that nature, so he's very well aware of what the invisible hand of competition is. So $5 million, they're going to come suck that up real quick. And you know, you're going to be right back where you started from, and I hope.
Well, we appreciate you. Appreciate you joining us tonight. 4644, thanks, man, for joining us tonight. A final thought before we get out of here.
Well, I agree with what the professor said. You know, he made mention of his economic status, and you have to see politicians about issues. No permanent friends, just permanent issues. I vote the issues. I don't care who they are. I vote the issues. And that's what you should be doing. What are their policies? Position yourself so that you can benefit from the policy. Or businesses control politicians. Politicians control the police. If you get away from that formula in your community, then you're going to be out there marching and protesting with your lips poked out and mean and mad.
Okay. All right. 3072, come on, give it to me now. I know you got it from me.
I just appreciate everybody's opinion tonight. I'm glad to be on the show. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with us. We appreciate you. We appreciate your contribution to the dialogue. And with that, Professor, final thought there before we get ready to get out of here.
One thing I want to put on the table is, at some point, you know, I love the fact that we have the tagline, "Oh, yes, we can." That leads to a lot of aspirations and so on. But let's get to "Yes, we do." And so let's identify the successes. Let's identify the things that we are doing well, and let's learn from those things. And then, yes, we will be better. And then let's do it.
Well said. Well said.
I'm all for it. Yes, we can, but we have to start focusing on the things that we do well. And there are a lot of things that we do well. Let's learn from them, and then let's do better.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And thanks for joining us tonight, then. All right, Pastor Wiley, you got the flow, man. What are you going to do with all this, man?
Man, you have to combine it all together and stir it up, you know. And the Bible teaches me about stirring up the gifts, so I don't want to stay in the role of an opinion, you know, because I'm not too well with that. I love truth, and the truth is the only thing going to make us free.
When we
get free, one thing that you will see is evidence of the power of God. Now,
yes,
I'm going to say this right here. He said, again, now it is high time to awake out of sleep. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. So let us cast off the works of darkness. How can you cast off the works of darkness if you're still asleep? So it's a matter about, I don't know how many presidents I've been in from the time I was slinging drugs. It still haven't stopped the flow of it. And I've been out of the game for a long time. And the and you're talking about our communities. The only way that our community can be restored is that we be able to put a stop to the what's destroying us, and that is definitely the drugs and et cetera, things that comes along with it. There's an exercise that comes along with the drug game, and it's called insanity, and it calls us to be able to look at corruption in motion without no evidence to stop it.
Yeah.
Because people are still asleep. Okay. So we got to wake up.
Wow. We thank you all for joining us, Pastor Wilder, and all of our callers, a caller from St. Louis there. I wish I'd have known, I would have hollered at you while I was there in the city. But we're going to be back next Thursday night. This coming Thursday, I'm sorry. And we're going to have on with us our special guest, Mr. Tidrell Stevens, who is the workforce development specialist at this new center that was built out of the ashes of the Quick Trip gas station that was burned. And he's going to kind of tell us about some of the things that they've done there, they've been able to do there in the city. We appreciate all of you all for joining us. This is Talk Straight, your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we'll be back Thursday. We're going to leave with this announcement. Appreciate you all joining us, and we look forward to joining us at 7 o'clock p.m. this coming Thursday night for another episode of Talk Straight.
Host, Reverend Reuben Dockery. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight on Blog Talk Radio. Here, you can share your thoughts as well as become informed about very important social issues confronting society today. Please take the time to visit my website at bfcinstitute.com. That's BFCINSTITUTE.com to learn more about our efforts to educate, inspire, and empower disadvantaged families across America to improve the quality of life. The best way to stay in the loop of future broadcasts, times, and locations for our traveling educational lecture series and innovative ideas is to become a BFC Institute seminar participant. You may do so by clicking the Join Our Group tab on the homepage. I would be delighted to respond to your suggestions and engage you further in most transformative information. Again, thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hearing from you online.